The following is presented by Maranatha Bible Church of Comstock Park, Michigan. For more information, go to mbcmi.org.
All right. We're going to take the first half hour or so here and tell you guys a little bit about the trip we went on to Papua New Guinea here a couple weeks ago. You guys sent us out a couple weeks ago here to go down there, over there, on the other side of the planet to be an encouragement to the Twombly family, Brian and Kara and their three kids. And you can see them in the middle there. You guys sent us to do that. I think we accomplished that. So we'd like to just tell you a little bit about our time there, some of the things we did, some of the ways we were able to serve them while we were there, and then just kind of an update on their ministry there and what's going on, and also some prayers that you can keep in mind as you're praying for them. The trip, of course, was quite long. We started a timer. I started a timer when I walked out the door of our house and stopped it when I walked onto the property here. This is where the Twombleys live, and this is the little compound next door where we stayed while we were there. So from my door to theirs was about 41 and a half hours. For real. That includes our layovers, but our longest layover, I think, Bob, in Dallas was like 4 hours.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So not really even that long with the layover. You know, our layovers really weren't that bad. So yeah, 41 and a half hours, a little less on the way back because of the tailwind. but before we ever left, we were warned of this, and also just kind of the, you know, you guys remember during COVID when you realized, wow, see, we're also not in control here. But when you realized during COVID that you thought you were in control, and then you're like, oh no. No, actually, that's a figment of my imagination. We were told that it would be like that in PNG, and it was a lot of the time. So this is us after we arrived. This is at the capital city in Papua New Guinea. It's Port Moresby. And so this is the biggest city in the country. And when you arrive at the international airport, it's definitely small, but you're like, okay, this isn't too bad. And then you walk down a tunnel and you get into the domestic side of the airport, and that's when you realize, like, okay, I'm definitely in a different place here. So when we arrive, we're standing there, and guys are trying to communicate to us, no, you can't bring these bags on board, and these ones are too heavy, and we're shifting things around and trying to get boarding passes, and we can't understand what anybody's saying. And all at once, the power in the entire airport goes out. Everything goes black. And there were 8 people that panicked. They were all from Michigan. When you could start kind of like seeing again and realizing what's going on, everybody's just kind of going about their business. And, you know, a few minutes later, power comes back up and things go on as normal. So that's how it started.
Actually, it started with us sitting in Grand Rapids, and the airplane was frozen over, and so then they had to de-ice the plane and then put anti-icing agent on it. So we actually left late.
We did, yeah.
Was it like an hour?
Hour and a half late, yeah, something like that.
We left an hour and a half late. I'm wondering if we were even going to get out.
Yeah.
And we did, obviously, and we didn't have any issues. So that was kind of the theme of the whole trip, like, what was going to happen next. So it started in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
And when we got to Brisbane, Australia, our bags actually weren't checked the whole way through. We were supposed to pick them up, and we didn't realize it because we were just transferring. And so our bags were just going to sit inevitably in Australia because they didn't have any tags to continue on. So by the grace of God, we ran into the guy that actually said, yeah, I can go down there and make that change for you. Al actually ended up talking with him, And so he went himself down to where the bags are, found our bags because we had our tickets. And then the popes were famous in the Australian airport because we were like, we want to see if our bags are there. And he said, what's your name? And he said, Pope. Oh, yes, we know you guys. You guys are all set. And so by the grace of God, our bags, which could have sat there until the second coming because they had no bags on it. They literally were supposed to stay there. The guy went down and he actually did fix it. And that was before we got to Madang, before we got to Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, kind of forgot about that, actually. So that's how it started, a bit of an adventure. Let's fast forward to how it ended, just to give you an idea. This is us leaving. So this is the airport in Madang. This is not part of the airport, just this. This is the inside. You can see all of it. This little spot right here where you can see all the way through, that's baggage claim. So it just gives you an idea. We went to leave, and I'm the one that booked all of our plane tickets, so I was a little nervous that obviously I got everything right for everybody. Everybody's was right other than mine. We got there, and the guy looked at me with a blank face when he looked at my passport. It was like, you're not on this plane. Whereas he didn't say that. He said something I couldn't understand. But Brian, you can see Brian here, Bob, me, and Frank there. I was booted. We got booted off the first couple flights leaving Papua New Guinea. So we were kind of working frantically. Those guys were to get me on the plane. I was so busy trying to get on the plane that I didn't notice. You'll notice my wife is not in this picture. That's because somewhere over here, she's trapped in a bathroom. She adventurously tried to use a public bathroom in Papua New Guinea and went in there, and once she got in, realized there's no handle to get out. So while I'm trying to get my tickets, my wife is literally on her hands and knees in a public bathroom trying to pry her fingers underneath the door with another woman from Papua New Guinea who was also trapped in there.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, we all got out of there. They did get my tickets. So that's the beginning and end. You guys fill in the blanks in the middle of everything else that happened to us. But just a little taste of you're certainly not in control. We were reminded that. Fortunately, we knew that God was in control the entire time. We were reminded that we weren't. And apparently, people of Papua New Guinea are also not in control. They literally stuck their fingers underneath the door and got their fingers under there. Were able to pry it open. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you've ever been into a third world country, into a third world country with a bathroom, and then to get on your hands and knees and put your fingers underneath the door and grab that door and yank it open across the floor, that's what she experienced. My family was fine, just for the record.
Yeah.
We didn't have any issues.
There seems to be a theme here.
Yeah. We were on the flight, so we didn't get stuck in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That's how she got out. Her and another lady just grabbed the bottom of the door.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Is
this a to fill that story out. That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't ask her that. She's not here to ask, so we can just make it up. Yeah. To fill out that story, yeah, she walked in and saw a woman sitting on the floor barefoot, and, that wasn't that abnormal other than it was in a public bathroom, but she used the restroom when she came out. She realized that the lady was wearing... I think she was part of the airport staff or security or something like that. So she realized she even worked there. And also helped her turn on the water because there were no knobs on the sink. There was some kind of screw you had to turn. I don't know. She knew the trick. Anyway. All right. So talk a half hour about just the bathroom experience here. This was our first morning. We hit the ground running. So our first full morning there was... Sunday. So we got to go to church with them. This is in a little village called Dogia. You can see this is the church right here, a small building next to the home of Pastor Danny and Mama Anna. And this, oh, there's Danny right there sitting. And we were warmly welcomed there. People were really sweet. We actually got to spend quite a bit of time with this family. They invited us to dinner a few days later. We got to, that's at their place there. There's the coconut triplets collecting coconuts. There was actually a young guy there that got all those coconuts for us. I think it's probably what, like 50. Yeah, it was
with
crazy.
With a machete in his mouth and a strap around his feet, find out a way to cut the coconuts down for us.
Yep.
And then you got to shuck them or shell them or husk them or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And then you get the little coconut in the middle. It's got the coconut water in it. And then you got to cut that open. And there's some great videos. I noticed they weren't on here.
Yeah.
Of us actually husking the coconuts. So that would be for a whole other presentation as well, because we were not as graceful as the locals. Some of us are more graceful than others, but we won't.
But we're not going to name names.
We're not going to name names. So,
no.
So the interesting thing is when he showed that picture of our first day at church there. So we left here on a Thursday. We crossed the international dateline, so we lose Friday. We landed on Saturday, so we didn't. That Friday didn't exist in our time. And so 15 hours ahead. And then we're at the church service the very next morning, and so they were very gracious, and you kind of woke up to 85% to 90% humidity, and that's what it was like the whole time you were there, anytime during the day, 24 hours a day, and so then we're able to worship with them right away, and then as Al said, brought us over to the house to have food with them. And at this stage, you can see on the left, Renee, I believe, is there cooking. So they actually take those coconuts, cut them all up, and they make coconut milk out of them right here, and then throw it into the pot to cook with the lamb and whatever else they had in there. He's got a picture of the food up there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's an actual
food. Yeah.
It's actually really good.
Yeah, some of it you can recognize. There's some broccoli there. There's some cauliflower, some cabbage, things like that. This is actually a banana. I think we had 10 different kinds of bananas, at least during our time there. I didn't even know that God made so many bananas. And it doesn't really taste like a banana. It tastes more like some sort of a potato. Yeah, so did those two things. The lamb flaps, actually, we brought.
Brian
brought. Yeah, we brought to the meal.
Yeah. It's like lamb ribs cut.
Yeah. Also, something we learned that I'm seriously considering implementing in my own house, and maybe we should do it here, but the men get to get their food first in Papua New Guinea. And also, yeah.
It's actually a real healthy strategy. I mean, there's nothing, okay. Yeah, I know, because you'll hear it from here, so it'll feed back into it. So I'm trying to talk louder, but yeah, it's actually helpful for the men to eat first. I think we're going to try that for a while just to see how it goes. I see some people like, is he being serious?
Yeah. It was really different culturally, though. Like, we got our food first. The guys all sit at this bench. There's Pastor Danny there. And then the women and kids actually got their food next, and they actually didn't even get a table set at.
No.
Right? They were just sitting in chairs. They were comfortable chairs, I assume.
They're high-quality plastic.
Yeah. But that's just the way they do things. But it was really sweet. Pastor Danny shared his testimony with us while we were sitting there. And this is a guy that Brian has really spent a lot of time with. He's one of the faithful pastors there. There's kind of a circuit of churches that are all EBC churches that Brian's been helping out, and Pastor Danny is a true believer there who is really concerned about preaching the truth, whereas some of the pastors are there just because it's a good job. Pastor Danny's not that way, and he's interested in just learning more. So, also Sunday nights. Okay, this is actually the next Sunday at the Village Church, a little bit bigger church. This is where the Twombleys spend more of their time. And actually, at this service, they played and sang an English song, for us because we were there. Which I don't think they knew what they were saying, but it was nice for us.
Yeah, there's about 10 people singing.
Yeah, right. And then Sunday evenings, the picture's a little bit blurry, but we spent it in the Twombleys' home, and their kind of tradition is to watch the service from their sending church, which is actually a week old at that point, but they watch their home church's services. And then the second Sunday we were there, we actually watched Maranatha's service with them. But Brian mentioned that was just one of the sweetest times for him because they're not a part of a faithful church there and haven't been for about a year and a half. And so to gather with a group of believers and listen to the sermon, sing hymns together, he said at one point this was at the end of the week, he said, man, at one point I just closed my eyes and just listened to you guys singing behind me, and it was just a little taste of back in Florida for them at their home church, and a little taste of what being a part of a faithful church is like.
But I think that too, like if you take it for granted, like you come to church on a Sunday, if you miss a Sunday, it's not a big deal, and you maybe come on a Wednesday, maybe a small group, they have zero people, none. Like there's not a single other Christian organization, church, midweek Bible study, nothing. Their actual fellowship or Christian fellowship and church fellowship comes from watching it online, and then they're starting things that are there, right? And so one of the reasons we went there was to be an encouragement for them. So for the last 18 months, they have not had a church body. They have not had individuals to sit down and talk with and talk over theology with and to do anything like that, anything in your life that has anything to do with fellowship, church, teaching, where you're actually with somebody, they don't have. It doesn't exist. And so he travels from church to church. He's really settled in on a few, I would say, where now he's started training some of the EBC, Evangelical Brotherhood Church, a Swiss mission organization that has basically hires on men, puts them through a 2-year or 4-year, something like that, training program. But some of them that are pastors don't even know the actual gospel. And so those are the men that he's dealing with. So there is no, like, he's being poured into. It's he's there working in a culture that he had to learn the language, which he knows fluently, and he can preach from because really, really well. If you think about, like, praying for them, how can you pray for them? And we'll get into all of that. But this is like one of the things right here. So the sweetest time they have is being able to sit down in their living room with their family and watch a church service. And so hopefully this gives you an idea of what they gave up to actually go there to bring the gospel to people when he has none. There is not a solid Bible church that he goes to. He actually goes up, and you saw the picture of him preaching that Al showed earlier. He goes up after the pastor will gently correct some of the things that the pastor said or expand on the idea that the pastor presented because he kind of fell short of what the real gospel was. And so that's what he's doing there, just to give you an idea of just the lack of any kind of biblical fellowship whatsoever. He just does not exist.
Yeah. It's their idea.
Yeah,
it's called strengthening the sermon. So I think it's normal for them to do that. So a guy gets up, gives a sermon, somebody else gets up and strengthens that. They might bring it from a little bit different perspective or angle, but they'll use the same text and just kind of strengthen that. But they've asked him, I think any time he is at one of these churches, which is every Sunday, he might go between a couple of them but they're all part of the same little circuit. And whenever he's there, he is the guy that will strengthen it. So they want him to do it. And I think he is careful. He, you know, he listens to what they're saying. He doesn't try to override what they're saying, but he tries to strengthen it and give it a little boost of truth. Yes. Yep. Every other Friday now, they do that. They look at the text, like Suzanne said, and decide how it's going to be preached. We witnessed this happen while we were there. So the Friday before we showed up, he got together with these men. They talked about the best way to preach a text, a particular text. We listened to it one Sunday with Pastor Danny at the First Church, and it was preached one way. And we listened to the same text get preached at the town church the next Sunday, and it was a completely different sermon. So Pastor Danny was on board with what Brian considered to be the right interpretation, and the next pastor wasn't convinced. So Brian had to adjust the way he strengthened that sermon as well. Pretty interesting.
And pastors, they don't stay at the church, so they actually rotate. So to give you an idea, it'd be like, if you just fix five churches here in Grand Rapids, right? So it would be like, this Sunday, Todd's here. Next Sunday, he's at West Cannon. West Cannon's pastor is at, pick another church in the area, I don't know. Their pastor is here. And then the next Sunday, Todd would be at the other church. That pastor would be here. And then, so they rotate, I think there's eight, something like that.
I think
that.
So, yeah, so that sounds right.
Eight total churches that they just rotate through. So not one church has a pastor. And so they just, that's the model that the EBC missionary set up for them, I don't know how many years ago it was, but
a long time ago.
And so they don't actually get in and, like, shepherd the flock. They're just there primarily for evangelism purposes. And so there's not a lot of, like, discipleship.
And 2 years from now, none of those pastors will be there. They'll all be in a different region, part of an entirely different circuit, and a new batch of guys will be in. So while Brian is doing a fantastic job, I assure you, immersing himself in the culture there and doing whatever he can to help these guys out, he also knows it's limited, because I say that. On the other hand, he's training these guys in biblical interpretation stuff, and they're going to be scattered here over the next couple of years, and they're going to different regions, and there's going to be a different group of guys. So on one hand, it's rough for him, but on the other hand, it's a way the Lord is using him there. Yeah, Sam? Brian's? Yeah, Stuart, Florida, Community Baptist Church in Stuart, Florida. Yep. All right. Okay, so outside of the church, I just wanted to share with you guys a little bit of what the Twombleys is. So they took more or less a spring break while we were there. So they were just wanting to go around. They wanted to show us all around Madang and show us all things PNG. So I thought it'd be fun to just share with you guys a little bit of what their life looks like and some of the things that we saw while we were there. This is the marketplace where they get all their fresh produce and groceries. This is right kind of in the center of Madang. And the girls took a trip early on to go get groceries and that sort of thing. You can see all the girls there. This is PJ and Sadie, the Twombly's girls. And this is Hannah, daughter of the Russo family, who just moved there more recently. They're doing like logistics there at the base.
So that before he moves on, I think to kind of hit the point, because maybe, you know, we don't always realize the importance of kids. So they have, you know, the Twombleys have three kids, the Russos who got there about 7 months ago, four kids. And so they don't have, there are no other kids. So for over a year, it was only the Twombly kids. And they didn't speak the language. There's no youth group, there is no Sunday school, there's nothing like that. And so us bringing our kids there, they were able to have sweet fellowship with kids. Like, our kids loved it, and their kids loved it. And so it was able to boost even the kids' morale. And you'll see a a poor note that you put in there from, I believe it was PJ, but maybe
Sadie, yeah.
Yeah, or Sadie. And so even the fellowship the kids had with one another was so important, because it helps the parents out as well, that their kids are actually interacting with other kids, that first of all, they can speak the same language. And then secondly, they have same values and same worldview, and they're not worried about what's going to be taking place like within conversations and those kind of things. So if you're thinking of missions trips, don't leave your kids behind. Like, it is really, really important for the whole family. And then obviously we get to experience it with our families, but then their family gets to be encouraged by our kids who are here as well.
Yep. So, yeah, we included the kids and all that stuff. So we did a lot of running around town. There was a butcher shop. I should have put a picture of that in there. There was lots of things we're used to seeing. Some things we're not used to seeing, like a full pig head. I was trying to convince Bob to buy that, but...
he didn't have a smoker.
Yeah. This is another shot of the market. Just to reiterate what Bob said, actually, the kids and the Twombleys, they were... Everywhere we went, we would go to the hardware, we would go to the markets, the butcher shop, wherever we went, everybody knew the Twombleys. And you're talking about a city with, I mean, tens of thousands of people in it, right? Everywhere we went, people knew the Twombleys. Now, granted, they stick out like sore thumbs around there. But they knew them. They didn't, yeah. They didn't just recognize them, they knew them. And it just, I think, to me, speaks for the effort the Twombleys have put in immersing themselves in not only the culture, but just into the people there. And so we would go places and guys would run up and they would call Brian by name, shake his hand, and they were happy to see him. And Kara was the same. And also everybody was giving their kids hugs. You could tell, they knew that family. And so I think the Twombleys, it should be an encouragement to you guys to know the Twombleys have just done an absolutely fantastic job just loving the people there and immersing themselves. And I have no doubt when they do and are able to plant a church in the near future that the people will be well served there by them. We did some things around their place. We went fishing. One day, I didn't put a picture of that in there, but you guys saw it in the newsletter. Is there? Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, we caught fish. We made sushi.
Actually, Al and Renee made sushi all by themselves. And they did a fantastic job. So, if you guys are ever looking for, like, a date night and you hire out your personal chef, just catch a fish.
Yeah.
Let them come in. Like, they literally did it all themselves. They cut it all up, made the rice, did everything. None of us got sick.
Well, some of us were already sick,
yeah.
But the rest of us didn't get sick.
Yeah.
So we did that. We did some snorkeling, which was just beautiful. This is right out in front of their place here. You can see everybody down in here snorkeling. I just thought this was a great picture because even though you can't see us very well, there's just reef all along there with just thousands of different species of fish. But this was a normal scene that you'd see from the front of their place. There'd be guys out fishing. Here's some people up watching. But also, the mountain range, if you notice in the background, that is the Finisterre mountain range. So it's across this bay. But if you guys know much about their ministry there, there's a family, the Can family, that is up in the mountains. They're somewhere over in here in the mountains. That's where they're serving. And Finisterre's goal is to have, I believe, a family every year they want to send out there. And so they're just getting started. But there is no road from Madang to anywhere in this mountain range, to give you an idea. The backside of this mountain range, there is a road that goes all the way out and around on the backside, but there's no way to get to any of this other than by boat or plane or helicopter or by foot. So we did get a chance to go up into that range a little bit. Bob and I, Brian took Bob and I up in there. And I'm glad we did. It gives you just a little bit of an idea of why some of the villages are so isolated there in PNG. This is the foothills of the Finisterre Range. So we're not even into the mountains here, and you can just see how rugged it is. And there's no roads that go through any of this. So I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but there's over 830 different languages in PNG. Not dialects, languages.
So they can't understand each other. That's what that means.
Right.
So one village would be 2 miles away from the other one, but they're totally different languages. And so you don't actually grasp it. So like he was saying, so you start going through and you realize to travel 2 miles would be several days and very deadly. Because we gained, I think on this, your little app, we gained 8,000 feet, but we're only at like 1,500 or 1,600 feet.
Yeah.
So that's like up and down, and it's almost straight up and down. As you're going through it. So no one would traverse that by foot. And so that's why you have so many different actual languages, is because they never go to another village, because to leave where they are would almost be certain death. Because you're traversing just straight down and then straight back up. You're in the jungle. Like it's thick, really thick.
Yeah. Actually, I believe they're sending, what's that? Oh, right. Yeah, so most of it's right there. They get it from the village. Are you talking about the family up in? Yeah, the Can family. I don't know as much about them, but from what I understand, everything they use and have is coming from right there. Now, when they went to build their house and that sort of thing, now that's all through Brian and Frank that are on base in Madang now. So that's, if they were to really need something, Brian serves as kind of a support for them in the mountains if they needed something. No. So, so there's two ways to get there. You either take a boat from around this bay. There's another bay over here. You take a boat straight across this bay, land it somewhere over there, and then you've got, I don't know how many miles it is to walk up into the mountains. So you can do that. Obviously not very efficient for getting supplies up there. It's either that or you take a plane in, or a chopper in there and drop supplies off. So those are the only two ways to get there. I know it's not where the cans are. I know there's not. No. Yeah.
That's all we saw.
Yeah, there is some landing strips along this coast and some little towns. I think the one that they motor to by boat, there is a landing strip there. Now, I don't know what kind of plane you could land there, but it's not much, the landing strip. No. You could, but we didn't. I mean, it'd be a multi-day adventure. I have no idea. But we definitely can put you in contact with somebody that does know.
Yeah.
Sam? Yeah, so like the local language in Madang would be Tok Pisin, so it's a trade language. You can understand portions of it. I think it's bits and pieces of English and German all kind of mashed together into their own thing. I don't think that is officially even a language.
It's not a language.
No.
It's actually just a, like trade, like if you're writing languages, like trade language would be the absolute bottom of the barrel. And then you would go up to then kind of making noises, and then kind of like you're going up a little bit so you get to a full-fledged language. So it's just enough to buy and sell. That's why it's called a trade language. It's just enough to like buy and sell and get by in the marketplace and those kinds of things.
Tok Pisin. Yep.
So they've taken it on as a common language. And so wherever you're from, you'll have your language that you speak, and then you'll also speak Tok Pisin, and then you'll also... Some of them speak English and some of them don't. A lot of them don't. So the common language of the year is baptism. And there's a Bible in the mm-hmm. in the language as well that that Brian preaches.
All right, so moving on to some ways that we were able to serve them while we were there, and some ways that we were able to encourage them. They asked if we would take some time and do some teaching time for their kiddos. So obviously they get that from their parents, but that's it. There's nobody else teaching them, so they thought it would be nice if they could their kids could be hearing some of the same things echoed from other people. So. Bob did a great job the one morning, got all the kids down there, and gave a gospel presentation. Another day, we split up, guys and girls, and we did a session on biblical manhood and another on biblical womanhood. I had a good time with some time alone with the kiddos there. The girls... took on a monumental task, from what I understand, of organizing some of their storage areas. So there's been other missionaries that have been on base here, and some of it, correct me if I'm wrong, Suzanne, but a lot of stuff was left behind from different missionaries, and just helpful stuff, but it all needed to be organized in these different storage rooms. So you can see a portion of that stuff here that they took the better share of a day to organize, and helped them out in that way. The kids, as Bob mentioned, did a great job jumping in, and they took care of dishes most nights, and they had a good time doing it together, but it also freed up us adults to get out of the kitchen and go and chat with one another. They spent, I think some of the sweetest times they talked about were just the times where we were able to hang out and just have conversation. Like Bob was saying, they don't have the opportunity to do that. And I know Bob and Suzanne especially were just a great resource for them. Bob having been a TES grad and past missionary, Suzanne also past missionary. And I know that Brian and Kara both benefited greatly from just, having somebody else to bounce some thoughts off of and some ideas off of. And I was thinking this, I was thinking that about ministry. How should we move forward with the church plant? Those sort of questions that they just don't get to candidly have with people. And so, a boat trip. Yeah, we caught some fish. We spent most of the time just dragging lures behind the boat. But that was some great time where we had some really, really great conversations out there. And I know the girls did the same on the house, around town, things like that. There again, the kids, they did a great job ministering to their kids. They did all kinds of stuff together. They played together. They had a basketball hoop in the backyard. They did that a lot. Swam together, read books to one another. They helped put the kids down for bed at night, just things like that. And they got pretty attached. As Bob said, we have a hard time understanding how isolated they can feel, and I don't think we even felt the weight of that at times. And the kids especially, I think one of the Ruscio kids mentioned, we no more than got there, and he started putting the pieces together like, we're going to be leaving soon, and it might be another year and a half before I can play with another kid my own age, that we can speak, because the kids can understand Tok-Pisin quite well. They're not really speaking it yet that well. So they really got attached, and it was great. This was a letter. So Brian printed out like an itinerary so we would kind of know what was going on each day. This is us departing for Port Moresby on Tuesday, and I came in to the little apartment for one day, and Sadie had wrote on ours, so they are not going. She was bummed about that.
Tell them what they did. Brian said after we left.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. If that's what you're talking about, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh no, because the kids were so devastated that our kids were leaving. Brian said we have to have a fun day. The day that you guys leave, otherwise it's just going to be everybody around the house is just going to be melting. So, I don't know what they did. I never asked them.
Yeah, they're a peppy bunch. Brian and Kara and the kids, they're happy people. And he said tomorrow's going to be a tough day. And that actually hit me a little bit. It was I think the morning we were leaving, he told me that. And he said, today's going to be a tough day. And so we'll do some fun things, keep everybody's mind off of it. It's going to be a tough day. And, man, that hit me as we flew out of there thinking, what if that was the Twombleys on that plane leaving and I was the one there? And you start putting yourself in those shoes and you start, getting the weight of their situation there. Bob, I think. Yeah. Brian, are you going to read that letter?
Yeah.
So Brian wrote a letter really to you guys. I don't know if you guys read it. It was sent out to the church.
Don't raise your hand if you didn't read it. I don't want to know if you read your church emails or not. But if you're saying what letter, don't say it out loud because it came in the church email. I just wanted to read it to you. We did send it out on Thursday. But Brian wrote this at 1 a.m.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know either. But so I just want to take a minute and read this. It says, to the saints at Maranatha Bible Church, thank you so much for sending the Scott and Cole families to us way out here in Madang. The time, money, energy, and prayers that were all put into the trip by all of y'all was worth it. Karen and I were so blessed to have these two sweet families come and be a part of our lives for 10 days. They all served us, laughed with us, prayed with us, talked with us, drank coffee with us, and the list goes on. On the outside, it may not sound like there was much accomplished, but know this. Our family was built up by their time here. Life in PNG has its natural difficulties, but nothing compares to not being part of a faithful church. We were sent out in 2023 to plant a church here in Madang Town, but in the meantime, we don't have one another's discipleship, the Lord's Supper, iron on iron, or regular equipping and encouragement from the weekly gathering of a biblical church. The team that y'all sent came and gave us a glimpse of body life at MDC, and they represented you so well. This was a true gift for our family. They also came with what seemed like a truckload of items for our family. For those of you who don't know, I think we're at 160 pounds worth of goods we brought just for them. And it wasn't like one or two big items. It was a whole lot of what you'll hear in a minute. And he said the team you sent, a truckload of items from school items to gifts to Oreos, which have strangely all disappeared by now. He was bragging about how many he had for breakfast, if you want to know how much he loves Oreos. He said, I mentioned to the team that the items themselves were so sweet, but probably the most encouraging aspect was y'all's desire to lavish us with any needs or even wants. The report of y'all's sacrifice and generosity as a church was such a gift to us. Even the kids on the team came ready to serve, from Bobby hanging out and spending time with Uriah to the girls doing all things girl, hair, dolls, playing pretend, and so on. The last night here, the kids all stayed up past 10 p.m. because Iris, Lila, and Maisie were all reading them books in their room. Keep in mind, Uriah's 9, Sadie's 7, PJ's 6. And all the time we spent together, I'll tell you, the only negative were that we had to separate for the night and go to bed. A book could not contain the amount of items we talked about. Getting to share my ministry needs, desires, plans with the men was for sure a highlight. Both Pastor Bob and Al are gifted men who have godly insight and care for the ministry here and for my family. Suzanne and Renee were two caring, insightful, and exemplary women prepared to spend time with them once. Maranatha, you are a truth, 3 John 8, fellow workers with the truth. The team you sent, the fact that you sent them, and the way you sent them are all evidence of y'all's commitment to our family and ministry here in Madang. Thank you so much for being a good church and holding the rope for us. We praise God for his grace and support for us here. If there were 50 reasons to be discouraged this last year, God gave us 1,000 reasons to be encouraged through this trip. To the only God, our Savior, through Jesus Christ our Lord, be glory, majesty, dominion, and authority before all time and now and forever. 225. For his glory alone, Brian Carey, Rice, Sadie, PJ, Walmart.
So if that doesn't convince you that a trip based on encouragement is needed, I don't know what will. And I'll tell you guys, before that letter was ever penned, I would have came back and given you the same report just based on what Brian told us while we were there. He was so thankful for you guys for even caring to send some people over to them. Not only that, but then send anything they needed at all was quickly given and generously given. And so I didn't even know that would happen, but while we were there, I was just really encouraged by you guys for even caring enough to send us. So I know it really was a great encouragement to them. Yeah, Buzz. It'll be a completely separate thing. So so they go through what they call CLA, culture, language, acquisition, and it takes a while. It's really their first term. So their first 3 years that they're there, they're just trying to learn language, learn culture, and get an idea of where he's going to plant. When he first got there, he was unsure. He thought, well, maybe we can come alongside a church that's here and help strengthen them. But then over time, he's realized that planting would be necessary just because the EBC church that he has been involved with, they're led and funded by somebody else, and you know, the his decisions can only go so far. So during his time of learning culture and language, he's found it's hard, because I asked him, so you kept sampling church, you would go to different churches and found the most faithful church you could and then immersed yourself in it? And he was hesitant. He said, I don't even know if I would call this a faithful church, he said. So because there are faithful people there, but some of the pastors, like I said, they're pastors because they saw it as a career opportunity. And some of the pastors, he certainly questions whether they're even believers or not. So, but he's chosen to immerse himself there and do what he can for the time being. He's coming home. He's coming back to Florida another just over a year. When he returns, he plans to plant them. And so he'll probably do that right in Madang there. Start from the ground up. Yeah. Just like it sounds. Yeah. Madang. Yeah.
So the things that he faces, though, the Seventh-day Adventist Church is huge there. It's huge. It has many, many schools because it integrates really well with the animistic beliefs, like the tribal belief system. So in order to please their dead relatives and spirits, they have to do certain things. And so the Seventh-day Adventist Church comes with their legalistic approach to God. And so they say, this is great. So for those who are not familiar with SDA, they would say you have to go to church on Sabbath, right, on Saturday, and a lot of other legalistic things. And so it actually slots in real well. And so they don't struggle to find people who want to join the SDA church because they're used to that kind of relationship. The other big denomination that there is Lutheran. And perhaps when it came a long time ago, it was a good movement, I don't know. But now it's not a gospel preaching movement. It's the same thing, just a lot of legalism and a lot of law keeping and rule keeping. And even within, as you know, you're talking about planting the church there, even within the evangelical brotherhood church that's there, the word for righteousness is to do right things. And so they would say, like a normal sermon on Sunday would say, if you go home, you have an argument with your wife, and then you die, you automatically go to hell because you haven't done anything right to make up for that argument. And so that's being preached at a quote-unquote evangelical church. And so to get their mindset off of a works-based religion is actually getting into the fabric of their culture, because everything they do is to please somebody else. So now the Christians come and say, you don't have to do anything to please God. In fact, he's not pleased with you, and that's why he sent Christ. And so then they would say, okay, he's not pleased with me, I get that, so what do I have to do? Well, you actually can't do anything, right? And so they'll say, well, no, there has to be something that I can do. And so that's where he runs into the issues, even within the local churches, the evangelical churches. So that's why starting a new church is so key, because he has to get outside of the cultural fabric that says, I have to do something to be right. And the only way he's going to be able to do that is by starting his own church. and then training these other pastors, perhaps he hasn't decided if he's going to keep that up or not. I don't think like training the EBC pastors still.
He is.
Even as he plants his church.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Yeah, probably not. I don't know. I shouldn't say.
Ask him, but. Yeah. And so that's just a mindset as you travel somewhere. So people might say, yes, I believe in righteousness, and yes, I believe in all of these things, but they're actually looking at it from a works thing. So even the word in Pachrism for righteousness means like doing right things, which we would say, yes, righteousness is doing right things. The Bible says to live this way to glorify God, but you're confusing justification and sanctification. They're using it for a justification, and the Bible doesn't do that. The Bible says now you're sanctified, you can live right. And so he's going head on against that. That's been just ingrained in that culture for a very, very long time. Yeah, you want to tell about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's. Yeah, to kind of give you an idea too of just the Madang area. If you were to look up like population of Madang, it will tell you around 30,000 people. I have no idea if that's accurate or not. It was 20 years ago or so. It was the last time they did a census, and even so, the people that live in Madang now were not born in Madang. These are people that are coming from villages. They come there for work. They leave. They come and go. And so it's really hard to tell. There's a lot of people there. I know that. If you were to look up Papua New Guinea in Operation World, which gives you an idea of different religion, you know, different countries and what their religions are, Papua New Guinea is it would say 96% Christian. Okay?
So it's a fully reached country.
Yep.
So it's not on the map for reading the gospel. Realize what that means. So.
Yep. What does anybody know U.S. what it would say? 76% or something like that?
110%.
Yeah. I think it's in the 70s. So they would say that Papua New Guinea is more reached than the U.S. And I'm not pitting the U.S. against Papua New Guinea. I'm just telling you what it says. I can assure you in Madang it is not 96% Christian. Okay? And to Suzanne's point, we saw a fair amount of missionary activity. In fact, I don't know about you, but when I've told people that I run into, yeah, I went to Papua New Guinea, their first thing is, were you there on missions work?
Right.
You know, they don't, of course, it's not a travel destination, so they're assuming I didn't just go there for vacation, but there was a lot of missionary work going on there. We ran into a handful of people. From my estimation and from my conversations with those people, it was humanitarian work that they were doing. Some translation work, that sort of thing, but there were people, all good things, right? There were people installing solar panels. There were people fixing up buildings, doing different things like this. I didn't run into one person that was planting a church. So just to give you an idea, there are roughly 13 churches, I think, in the town of Madang already. And Brian put himself in perhaps the most faithful one. And I just want to give you an idea, so you get an idea of a sermon that you might hear in one of these EBC churches in Madang. Okay, so we're spoiled here, right? We get the word fed to us every Sunday. We have faithful elders who teach us the word, teach us how to read and interpret the word for ourselves. So we can do that every single day and throughout the week. Pastor Todd gets in the pulpit and exposits the word, explains to us what it means, and then helps us apply it to our lives, right? Here's just a couple of examples of things that have been preached from the pulpit right where Ryan goes to church. Matthew 3:4. I'll read you the text. Now John, speaking of John the Baptist, now John himself had a garment of camel's hair and a leather belt around his waist, and his food was locust and wild honey. No interpretation, straight to application. Look at how little John the Baptist had. All he had was camel's hair, some locusts, and honey to eat. You shouldn't complain about what you have. That was the sermon. Luke 2:1. Now in those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that had a census be taken of all the inhabited earth. Again, no interpretation, no mention that this is just a narrative text. Straight to application. For this census, every man had to go and make his mark in a book. Now I have a question for you. What book is your name in? The book of life or the book of death? That was the sermon. So I say these things not to at all mock or belittle their sermons, but just give you an idea of what you might hear in one of in a city that is 96% Christian. Right? So I noticed, and I hope you can notice, just the great need there was there in Madang, and I'm assuming the rest of Papua New Guinea. And the missions work that is going on there, although good work, isn't church planting efforts. It doesn't appear to be. So, Evan. Yeah, so the work's not done. Yeah. Definitely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know he will. In fact, that's what he's doing in the EBC churches, even though he knows he's going to be leaving those, so he's being faithful to that now, even though he knows he's going to be planting later. So
just to give you an idea, something else I've done, so I don't know if you've heard it or not, but the Wycliffe translators, SIO translators, they're translating from the local language into the Bible into the local languages. There's literally warehouses full of Bibles that are over there, but what they do is they'll take a 3-year or a 6-year term, they'll translate the text into the local language. They'll hand it over to them and then they leave. So there's no training, there's no church planting, there's no desire to see a body built up. And so when you read a number like 96% reach, built into that number is people who have the Bible in their language. So it's true, they have the Bible in their language, but what's not true is that there's a church there or that there's discipleship happening or that evangelism is going on. And so there are many tribes out there that have the Bible in their language, and that those Bibles are just being eaten by rats. They have flood damage done to them. They're just stored somewhere. So somebody did all that work, and it's not easy, right? I mean, you're talking a non-written language that's been spoken for how many years, and someone goes in with zero idea of what that language is and take that over the course of 3 or 6 years, live with those people, learn context. I mean, it's a great work to translate that. But then just to hand it over, and then, as Al said, not continue that, which is then church planting, discipleship, training, all the things that we know to be true of a biblical church, it's done. It's not done there. And so that's the thing that Brian saw, was while they aren't faithful to interpret or faithful to translate the text, there is nobody training. There is nobody. They're just saying, here's the Bible. And good luck. My term's over, and I'm going to go do this somewhere else, or I'm going home, or whatever. And so while there is a lot of missionary activity, and it was interesting, Brian said something like, think about how many people you've ever heard has done mission work in Papua New Guinea. You know, my wife and I knew some people that were there. I'm sure you can go around the room, and some of you guys heard of people that were doing mission work there. Then why is the country the way that it is, and why is there still hundreds of language groups that aren't actually reached yet? Because the work is primarily humanitarian, as Al was saying, or it's, let me get the Bible in their language, and then we're just going to step away and see what happens. Yeah.
What would you think preventing somebody from starting to come to their neighborhood?
Nobody wants to do it. Nothing's stopping it. It's not like there's government restrictions. I mean, we went fishing it. you don't have to buy a fishing license. You can go spear a dolphin if you want. Throw it into your... We did not do it, just for the record. My daughter would have killed me. You can get anything from sailfish to the fish that we caught. And we didn't see them, but he said there's Chinese trollers that go there and just drop their nets or whatever, however they catch. I'm not a fisherman, so however they get their fish. And there's no government regulation. There's pirates that were out there. So you see the boats always traveling in two, and the government doesn't regulate it. There's no Coast Guard to call if your engine fails, which we found out because the engine failed. And so you're on your own. So as far as, like, how to get licensed by the government, there's nothing like that. You can go there and start a seminary tomorrow. It's just, does somebody want to actually go into it? Yeah. You want to go? I saw that hand. Yeah, they have great, they have schools. I mean, they have great locations and buildings.
Who started that? I don't think so. I think the native people there started the cargo cult.
Yeah.
I don't know if they had anything to do with that or not. Yeah. Good question. Consistent. We didn't see that much, but it seems consistent with what we saw. Just we did see a lot of ramen. Yeah. just moving into what the Twombly's ministry looks like right now. We don't spend a lot of time with this because we already talked about most of it. But this is the group of guys that are pastors in the EBC circuit. So. When they do their bi-weekly preparing for worship, they call it, where they discuss a text and decide how to interpret it. This is the group of guys that Brian's getting together with every other week. Yeah, this is Brian. Yeah.
He's a little taller.
So if you guys want to be praying for those guys, certainly that would be good. This is also exciting. So back, I guess, to this one. This is Pastor Massa. He's the guy that is kind of the head over all these guys. And he invited Brian to start doing a further, a little bit deeper pastoral training course. So this is monthly now. And guys come in from the EBC circuit, also from Karkar, like a volcanic island that's off the coast. So guys will come in on boats to be trained. And this is all under Brian, and he's been asked to do this. So this was actually last Thursday was the very first one that he was able to do. And this is the group of guys that came, and I think there's going to be more in the future. So just what a great opportunity for him. He's doing this. They're helping the other family, the Russo family there on base, get through their culture and language acquisition. So that's something else that they're working on. And they have three families that are moving to Madang this summer. They're all going to be going out into the mountains once they are trained. So their bases can be full here pretty quick, but they're all leaving. So that's some of the stuff he has going on. And then, of course, in 2027, hopefully that's when they'll be planting a church. So lots going on for these guys. Some prayers for them. Their family, Brian's health, I guess I listed that under health, but their family, their marriage, their parenting, things like that. You know, there's a lot of strain on them there, and part of it is just being alone and being alone culturally also. So just pray, keep them in their prayers that their marriage would continue to be strengthened. Their kids are just wonderful kids, just a joy to be around. They're doing a great job as parents, but just please pray for their kiddos too. It's hard on them. Just being in a strange place, of course, not that strange to them now. It's becoming more and more their home. Their health, there's a lot of things. I think Brian said PNG wants to kill you.
Everything in PNG wants to kill you. So we did a lot of snorkeling, a lot of things there. Some of us were touching the things that wanted to kill us. Others,
we also won't name names about that one.
Others of us didn't. Everything there is deadly. Like, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, a lot of just diseases and bacteria and stuff that our bodies aren't used to, and they're getting used to. So right now their littlest one, PJ, has a big rash on her leg. I don't know if it was a bug bite or bacteria or what it was, but Brian is having some really weird health symptoms that he'll be getting. Yeah, you're right. We think we might have figured this out. We're not even doctors. He's going to be getting that checked out when they go to the next time they're in Australia. But just that their health would hold out, because I know that they have no intentions or desire to come back. They're wanting to stay and finish their work there and see people in PNG saved. So just pray that their health would continue so they can continue their work there. You can be praying for the guys in the pastoral training, and they're preparing for worship. Just those pastors in that EBC circuit, that they'd continue to grow. And wisdom and church planning. Brian obviously has a lot on his table, and just a lot of questions. When do I plant? Where do I plant? How do I plant? Those types of questions that he's having to figure out all for the first time. So prayers in that, and then for more workers to be sent into the harvest there in PNG. There's still a great need. He specifically has a need for another family or two that could help him in the church planting efforts right there in Madang. Obviously, there's plenty of people that can be sent out in the mountains too, but for the Twombly's sake, right there in Madang, there's a great need for churchmen, families to join them in those efforts. Also, You don't have to be a pastor to go serve there either. They need a tradesman. They need a jack of all trades there. As the base grows and their ministry grows there, there's lots to keep up. And every family that gets sent out into the mountains needs a home. So they need to chopper supplies in, build homes in the mountains. And obviously, Brian can't do this on his own. These single families can't do this on their own. And they need help with that as well. Also, somebody to handle leadership around the base. So as people are coming and going in and out of the mountains, they need somebody that is kind of a lead man over there. So lots of opportunities, guys. I would ask you, as you pray for the Twombleys, to also pray that more people would be sent, and consider it. Actually think about it. And not think, boy, do I want to go or do I not want to go, but think why it shouldn't be you. Maybe it's not the Twombleys, maybe it's somewhere else in the field, but there is a great need. I'm telling you, we witnessed it ourselves, and I would just really implore you guys to just consider it, and think about it, and pray about it. And lastly, just again, thank you for everybody who that sent us over there, that supplied things. I know the Twombleys really appreciate it. You have anything else to add, Bob? I left you.
Yeah, Chris. 5 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're asking why put this time investment into the EBC church when they know they're just going to plant later? And why not plant now? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I think that is the biggest part of it. So they figure it takes a few years to really nail down the language and the culture, and I think they're being very careful not to rush into church planting and then communicate things to the people there that they're not intending. So they're wanting to make sure they have this nailed down tight before he plants a church. Yeah. Yeah. So
after
it's.
Come back, so they're going to come here, and then after they return back, is when they'll start planting. So they'll have the full term.
Yeah, I think it is strategic the way they're doing that. Not only will this give them an opportunity to go to their home church and, you know, discuss with their elders, okay, here's what we see, here's what we think is a plan, what do you guys think, and kind of a round table with them, and then they can go back and plant, and now they're there for the next 3 years without having to leave. So I think that's another strategy there. Yeah, good question.
Yeah, and Brian is the exception. He caught on to the language and the culture. Like what Al was saying, whenever you go somewhere, like they're looking for Brian. Like if they see any one of the kids or Kara, like they're always asking, where's Brian? And so he just endeared himself to that culture. So when they moved there, the family went to that market that you saw, and they sat with the other family that's selling things, and they cut up the stuff, and they sold it alongside of them to learn language and just to love the people. And Brian has he's made himself to where even when we were eating that lamb at a place, one of the local village, the mom, she actually said, "Oh, don't eat off of that. It's really dirty." And Brian still fed us from such a dirty place that we ate the lamb. So even like he's put himself into their culture. He's not offending them at all, but he's kind of the anomaly. That doesn't happen a lot, and so. He also is very aware that by planting a church, he also doesn't want to offend the other pastors that he's working with, but at the same time understands, like, we have to be able to plant a church here, but he can't do it on his own. And so I think he's waiting for other people to come along as well and help. So normal, like Al said, your cultural language acquisition there, you're looking at 2 years. Because it's, you know, the best way you can describe it is probably like going to Mars.
And you're learning everything new, from driving on the other side of the road to, you know, the different foods that they eat to the customs. And so he's doing all of that before he starts. Yeah, so Brian, you can kind of look at Brian as he oversees the ministry and talking to him, specifically to him. And so then as they were going out, they go through him to get what they needed and then go out to wherever their respective place would be.
He's a church planner in Madang First, who's taken on the role as a field director for the people in the mountains. So that's another role that needs to be taken when he really church plants, to really put his all into church planning. Finisterre? Yep.
Yeah, I encourage you guys to go on Finisterre's website. I think that video is up there now. To see the work that we're doing. And it's a great way to stay in contact prayerfully with them, just to keep in the front of your mind what's going on.
Finisterre? Let me see. FINNISTERRE, something like that. I'm close. It does.
Yeah.
You have to be careful giving things to them? Is that what you're saying? Or? So, yeah, that's a good question. So from what I understand... Yeah, right. So I get a flat tire on the side of the road. Somebody comes along, helps me change my tire, and they do so without asking for anything. Great. I'm on my way. I'm very thankful. Fast forward 5 years... That guy that gave me the tire now needs something. And he comes knocking at my door and says, hey, remember that tire I gave you? I guess that's common. That's a cultural thing.
That was more outside of the city.
It was, yeah. I don't know if you'd see the same kind of thing in the city or not. Yeah.
When we went into the jungle or the foothills, he had said that's very common. So the tribes will come and cut down the grass. Like, you know, we have lawnmowers and the highways that keep the grass down. Well, they have tribes that take that on, and they'll do that. And then they'll say, hey, 5 years ago, we cut that down. What are you guys going to do for us now? And so that's very common outside of the city. But in the city, I don't think there's anything like that. You actually know.
Yeah, I don't know how baked that is into their culture.
Yeah.
Good question. Yeah, Buzz.
Al said that just for the record.
Yeah. Al is also not a proponent of that. I just was suggesting maybe we should think it through. That's all. Yeah. I don't know. And they weren't eating after us. They would just get in line. After. You know, it's just kind of the reverse of the way we would do things to be polite. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they do it that way. Just extra broccoli.
Yeah.
Sound bad.
Yeah, you don't
want to
mess with that.
it didn't seem, at least in the groups that we were with, it didn't seem like the men were at all acting like they were above the women necessarily. But you also didn't know who was married to who.
In the church.
In the church. You sat, you know, women on one side of the church, men on the other side of the church. And we were told just, you know, when you're out in public, you don't hold your wife's hand and put your arm around her, because people would assume if you were doing that, likely she was a prostitute, because married people just didn't do that. So it was really hard to get Bob and Suzanne to stop holding hands while we're there. I gotta tell you, guys, they're, when they're on vacation, they're lovey-dovey. Yeah.
They can talk to you, like have the same language, yeah. And also a lot of them are, say again? They can swim.
Yeah, I think they still struggle to communicate as well. And that's actually something else you guys can keep in your prayers, because I know the Twombly kids, they just started going to like a Sunday school at their church just 2 Sundays ago. So that's something new for them, and something to help with that situation, to kind of get them speaking, talk this in more, hopefully, and kind of give them that little nudge into the culture there too. That he expected versus what it actually is. I don't know. I don't think so. I think they kind of knew what they were getting into. I'm sure there has been plenty of surprises, and I don't think he maybe realized what that kind of isolation would feel like. I say isolation, again, it's not like he's not around other people, you know, but, yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah, so, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. You think you know what somebody's saying.
Simple.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, oh, I know what this guy's saying, and you might have caught a word, and but yeah, I guess that's a trap you fall into when they're learning this, like, just, you're like, oh, I got this is easy, and then you realize how much you don't know immediately after that.
Your Bible app, some of the Bible apps, actually the Bible talks simple, so just kind of like giving you the idea of how simple, like, you just receiving them. Because I had the app open on my phone, and then the English underneath it, and I thought I was following along, but I wasn't. Because you're like, oh, that's what he's saying. You're like, oh, no, wait, he's in a whole different chapter, right? And so you think you understand what they're saying, because it's really close to English. At some point, so it's really close to English, but unfortunately, it's a lot harder than it is.
Yeah. So to your point there, Jamie, in Tempe, Arizona, that is actually where Finisterre Mission is based, I guess. So that's where it was born,
from. So the original people that went over there, there was a team of three that went to PNG. One of them actually passed away. One of them is the Can family, who is still out in the mountains. The other one is the Laymans, and they were there. Now they're back, which was the plan, but they're serving from here and helping to facilitate other missionaries that go out there. And I think Scott Maxwell is the president of that, and he also is there in Tempe. So if anybody is interested or just wants more info or whatever, I'm absolutely happy to answer any questions you have or put you in contact with any of those guys or whatever. So good question. Thoughts? I did two haircuts while I was there. Yeah. I gave Kara some pointers. She cuts the boy's hair there. So yeah, I did that. Yeah, Suzanne's here and Iris is here and Bobby's here too if anybody has any questions for them and direct it towards the kids. Or, you know, Suzanne, you guys did a lot of stuff that I didn't even know because we were off doing other things, and as the days roll on and Renee will keep telling me stuff, I still am learning things that you guys did that I didn't know about. So well, there's no more questions.
I got 5 minutes. You guys get your handouts.
Yeah.
No, so if you have your handout, you can save it until next week. We'll just do it next week. But you want to end praying for the long meeting?
Absolutely. Yeah. Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much for the opportunity to come here and just celebrate the goodness, the good things that you've done for us and the opportunities that you've given to us to go and minister to the Twombly family. We thank you that this trip was such an encouragement to them, and we just thank you for all the generosity and that the saints here at Maranatha have shown towards that family. Father, I pray that you would raise up more workers to go into your harvest there in PNG. Pray for Brian's ministry there, men of the EDC church there would come to know you if they don't, and also grow in their understanding of you, that there would be many, many solid churches planted there in PNG, not just Brian's, but even Father, as you work through the EDC church there, that many, many people would come to know you, that your name would be glorified across the country there. Pray also for their family, that you would strengthen their marriage. Pray that their kids would grow to be strong, faithful servants of you, and that they would all grow in their trust in you as things come up all the time there. They're not expecting. But we just, again, thank you for safely taking us there and back, for all the prayers from all the people here and the support that we felt while we were there also. We give all glory to you for these things. Amen.
You've been listening and presented at Maranatha Bible Church in Comstock Park, Michigan, where we exist to display God's glory, declare God's truth, delight in God's Son, and disciple God's people. No part of this digital file may be reproduced or distributed without prior written consent. For permission, go to mbcmi.org.